Right at the outset, I want to express my gratitude this morning to the Egyptian people for knocking live coverage of the Zimmerman trial off CNN. Even if it lasted for only a few days. But was anybody else struck by the juxtaposition of the historic events in Tahrir Square and our own nation's celebration of its freedom? I couldn't help but contrast the celebrations, both with fireworks, but one with millions of people in Cairo's large public square, and the other with millions of people in town parades, at backyard barbecues, and family gatherings spread across all 50 states. Time passes, and the nature of our celebrations do too. Both of these celebrations were of freedom, and both were appropriate to the circumstances in which we find ourselves. Events of the past week, both here and in Egypt, were a timely reminder to me that our theme for this month, Called to Freedom, is meaningful on so many different levels. Events in Egypt and our celebrations in the U.S. remind us that the call to freedom is often political. It means freedom from oppression, for the release of slaves from whatever domination system holds them, whether the Hebrew slaves in ancient Egypt, African slaves in America's antebellum South, or sex workers in brothels all over the world. But the intense suffering of those people reminds us that freedom is more than historical liberation movements. It's also very, very personal. For example, I can't help but think that there were also lots of Egyptians who, for all sorts of personal reasons, were not in Tahrir Square, but were sitting at home. The call to freedom was not being ignored by them, but being experienced differently. It may be focused on practices of body, mind, or heart that bring freedom from pain or disease, from any of the myriad habits and temptations that complicate our lives. Because there are two ways for me to talk about the call to freedom. One is political, and one is personal. And in this context, pastoral. As I've said before, when I've talked about polarities, it's not that one is right or wrong. They're both right. Life is an oscillation between the two, an oscillation that plays out in history and that also plays out in our own lives. History has times of bold, liberative movements when the call to freedom is political, when we are called to public squares to demonstrate against economic and civil injustices. And history also has more personal times, gratefully experienced in backyard barbecues. So it is with us. There are times when we are called to protest, demonstrate, advocate publicly, and times when we are called to look deeply into the well of our own being and do the hard work of freeing ourselves from thought patterns or behaviors that have become our personal demons. Sometimes the chains we break are the ones that are forged by our own minds. So we have this double oscillation as individuals between a call to freedom that leads to social action or a call to freedom that leads to personal transformation. But we also, as are citizens of history, and experience the call to freedom that leads to social disruption or a call that leads to social improvement. We can all read the signs of our times and watch the oscillations that occur in history. What we can't do is read the oscillations taking place in someone else's personal life. That is something that only we can do for ourselves. We can't read other people because of another thing that's true about polarities. They are never pure. No matter how far apart the poles are, there's always a piece of the one in the other. It's like that yin-yang symbol. It's like, yeah. There's a white dot in the dark side, and there's a dark dot in the white side. So the bravest person has moments of doubt. The strongest person has moments of weakness. And by extension, the most timid person will surprise you with a brilliant burst of courage, and the most arrogant will deflate into genuine humility. So again, there are two ways to talk about a call to freedom. One is public, and the other is personal. Life is an oscillation between the two that plays out in history, but that also plays out in our own lives. So the important thing is to know where you are now. Are you in the public oscillation or the private one? Are you fighting political systems on the outside or self-made chains on the inside? Are you called to protest social injustice, or are you called to social improvement through the practice of law or medicine or teaching or the arts or hospitality or the cultivation of beauty? Everything we do is received into God, and God relishes diversity and intensity of experience. God receives the actions of the world and our own individual actions, and then fashions another call for us to one kind of freedom or another, depending upon where we are. Where are you now? How intentional are you about where you are now? We can always fall back into old patterns, what Paul calls, what are the elemental spirits? And that is frequently where we feel the most comfortable because that's where we spent the most time. But God calls us forward to freedoms that we haven't yet experienced. This is not so comfortable because we don't know this part at all. We are not called to submit again to a yoke of slavery. We are called forward. We are less likely to fall back if we're paying attention, if we're intentional, and we try to open ourselves to God's call. To go forward into freedom requires a few habits: a habit of imagination, a habit of hope, the habit of courage. Imagination is in our nature, and thus it is a gift of God. If we are figuratively standing behind bars, imagination is the ability to see ourselves on the other side. Not just see the other side, but see ourselves on the other side. The habit of hope is also a gift, honed by our knowledge of countless people in worse situations than ours who persevered and changed history, which is also, by the way, a good reason to read history and biography. The habit of courage is, I think, the hardest one. How often do we know what we need to do but are unable to do it? The thing about a self-made prison is that the door isn't locked. And at some level, we know it's not locked. And yet we stay inside. I don't have a lot to say about courage because, frankly, I'm still working on that one. The closest I can get is this. It has something to do with solidarity, with trusting in the power and presence of God, and it has something to do with knowing on some level that it's not about us. Courage means transcending the personal for something bigger than ourselves, even when the struggle is a very private and personal one. It's still about transcendence. But I also like to think that, like any habit, all of these things, imagination, hope, courage, take practice and repetition. We need to be intentional about them. Set aside time for them. Nurture them. Cultivate them carefully. It is scary to step out into freedom, but the best part is that once you get going, the oscillation isn't so wild anymore, and each pole empowers the other. For years, my husband John and I lived in a Victorian house in St. Paul, Minnesota. It was built in 1886. When we first bought it, most of the walls were the original plaster, and it wasn't in very good shape anymore. In fact, there was a huge crack in the dining room, so we figured we would just knock out the plaster around that area and patch the wall. I'm looking at some of you who have done remodeling. The first thing we found was that the plaster was loose all around the crack, so we took out the wall. And that led to the next wall. And then that led to the next wall. And then to the ceiling. And then before we knew it, we had pulled down the plaster and were down to the lath in three rooms. But the new wallboard wouldn't go up over the lath, and that was also fire tinder. So we took out all of the lath, and we were down to the studs. And then it would never be so easy again to rewire, so we did that. And then several months and several dollars later, what had begun as a simple patching project ended up as three completely remodeled rooms. We started with a simple plan, to patch a crack in the wall. But once we got going, we ended up doing so much more. And I think that's the way it is with God's call too. You start with one thing, maybe a plan to change one bad habit. One thing leads to another, and before you know it, you've done a major remodeling job, not on the house, but on your very life and being. There are so many ways for us to open ourselves to God, and oftentimes it is through the cracks that appear in our lives, the things that are broken and need repair. However it happens, we find ourselves opening to a power greater than our own and finding a courage we did not know we had to transform ourselves into better people. And sometimes, along the way, we change history. Because the thing is that it is impossible to experience the transforming power of God in your own life and continue as a bystander. The oscillation begins. You start by putting your own house in order, and then you find yourself in service to your neighbor. You begin by remodeling your life, and you are led to remodeling the world. You find that you cannot love God without loving your neighbor, and you cannot love your neighbor without working for justice and for the good of all. Because now you can't ignore the cracks in society's walls either. You see the things that are broken and that need to be repaired. Tahrir Square is a place in Egypt, but it is has a metaphorical equal in the human heart. There is a Tahrir Square, a Tiananmen Square, a Boston Commons in the human heart. It's the place where imagination and hope come together, where courage is found, where we respond to God's call forward to transform ourselves and thereby society, to transform society and thereby ourselves.
Brian, I want to thank you for this lay this morning, the lays that you've put on the altar and that you've given us to wear. This lay for the last half an hour has been praying its prayer around my neck. And as I listened to Pastor Janine's sermon, thinking about the pastoral prayer, and thinking about this congregation, I realized what an amazing symbol this lay is for this congregation. this lay, your work, that then prayed its prayer to make my life better. I arrived this morning and ducked into the fellowship hall to grab a bowl for the Lucky Charms, and there was Nancy and Rose cutting food that we'll eat in the fellowship hall after church. I came in, there were people to greet us in the at the door, there were people rehearsing music. This church is alive with prayers. And as Pastor Janine just said in her sermon, they are the prayers that are changing the world. Will you join me in prayer? Loving God, in you we find our freedom. Freedom to love, to bond, to unite. Freedom to study and question. Freedom to form a family and to stand up for it, to be a congregation and a chorus of voices raised for justice and equality, compassion and creativity. We are so grateful for the strength that we find in this room with each other. We know that in the world there are people who are not free, people who are in chains of loneliness and depression, people who serve at the hands of marketing and consumerism, people locked behind bars of poverty and political oppression. And we know also, loving God, that there are things in this room that seek to imprison us: worry, doubt, fear, illness. And while these things are real, we know that you experience them with us. And just as they are taken up into you and your life, we as a congregation take them up into our communal life. We bear them together. With your strength, we dare to imagine seeing ourselves on the other side of those prisons. We have the courage to see the things that are broken and the dedication as a family to healing them. In that spirit, loving God, we remember Pierre and Pat this morning, and we remember others silently in our hearts. You are our freedom, loving God, and what a beautiful scent it has. How beautiful this family, this time, this bond. A bond that we honor by praying as Jesus taught his disciples to pray, saying, "Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever and ever. Amen."